Okay, thanks Andrea for the invitation and especially inviting me to this beautiful place when the East Coast is so cold now. Okay, so my talk today is about some non-convex optimization algorithms for some statistical problems. And so it's great that a lot of people before me have already motivated a lot of things about non-convex optimization, so I'll skip these parts. So I think everybody probably is already convinced that a non-convex problem is difficult. But engineers and applied scientists are usually not really afraid of non-convexity. They are still trying to solve it every day, usually using the some of the simplest algorithms that you can ever think of, like gradient descent, stochastic gradient descent. So now a lot of people try to think about how to interpret the remarkable empirical performance of such algorithms for solving non-convex problems. So some of the possible way to understand this is that if you have some nice statistical model generating the data or the problem that you have, maybe the non-convex problems you have are not as bad as the worst case situations, in which case you might have a lot of hope in getting a much efficient solutions. So just give you one example if you are not familiar with this. So this was done by Nati maybe 2 years ago, I think. So about low rank matrix recovery. So this is a problem about recovering a low rank matrix when you have some random samples about this low rank matrix. So think of AI as some kind of, let's say, IID Gaussian matrix, which Nati has mentioned this morning. Okay, so this is a very nice result. They have derived in, I think, a NIPS paper. So suppose that you have enough samples, like this suppose that you have a rank R matrix. Suppose your number of measurements exceeds the order of the dimension times the rank, so the information theoretic limits. And then it happens that even though this objective function is highly non-convex, this actually is a nice non-convex function because there's no bad local minimum there. Okay, so there are only two kinds of critical points that you need to deal with. The first kind is the global solution, which basically just the ground truth. The second type is the so-called saddle point. So there's no other local minimum. So if you run the gradient descent algorithm, if you converge to some stable version of the critical points, and you are guaranteed to find the right solution. Okay, so this is a kind. This is one example of a large, a growing literature that people have done in the last several years. So for a lot of different problems like matrix completion, matrix sensing, phase retrieval, empirical risk minimization, several people here actually have discovered that a lot of such problems have very, very nice landscapes. So this actually motivates a kind of paradigm that people use across multiple communities to understand some specific problems. So first of all, a lot of people try to look at things from a geometric point of view by studying the landscape, trying to see whether there's any bad local minimum there. And if it happens that the landscape is not so rough or if it's benign enough, so maybe you can give it to some optimization theorists and they will tell you that if the landscape is nice enough, and there's some algorithms, which Mike Jordan has discussed yesterday, which allows you to find the global solution. Okay, and this has motivated the following analysis paradigm. So basically, you give the geometric analysis to some statisticians, and they look at specific problem, look at things from purely geometric point of view, and see whether there's any bad local minimum or not. After that, optimization people will take the problem and they say, okay, I designed some generic optimization algorithms to deal with such problems. Okay, so this has this kind of analysis paradigm has generated a lot of interest in the last few years and has been very successful. But what I would like to argue today is that it's nice that you can separate the problem into two parts and study them separately. But usually if you do it this way, you might actually end up getting some highly conservative guarantees, in particular from the computational perspective. And for example, a problem called phase retrieval that I'm going to discuss, or matrix completion or something like that.
So by pessimistic and computational, do you mean?
I'll talk about that in
so
one minute.
Do you want to speed up the volume?
Yes. You can speed it up. Sometimes not even from poly time to linear time. Sometimes from exponential time to some. Okay, I'm talking about specific algorithms. Okay, so what I try to argue is that if you can blend landscape and convergence analysis, usually you can get something much nicer for specific problems. Okay, so and sometimes even the simplest algorithms like gradient descent, stochastic gradient descent. Might be already the most efficient algorithms that you can think about. And when I say efficient, I mean computationally efficient and statistically efficient. Okay, so I don't have a grand theory for this. I'm just going to do it in the interest of time. I'm just going to talk about one problem, about phase retrieval or solving random quadratic system of equations, which Yue has already talked about this morning. Okay, so this is the problem. So suppose that I have a signal x star n dimensional, so it's a high dimensional object. What I observe is some quadratic measurements about this. Okay, for this talk, I'll consider the noiseless case for simplicity, but you can consider noise for sure. Okay, so I have a lot of quadratic equations about this this ground truth object x star, and I don't get to see the. So in some sense, this is like measuring the. Taking some linear measurements about some object, but without knowing the global sign or without knowing the sign or phases of the problem. Okay, so this problem is motivated by physics because this is a sort of like a century-old problem about phase retrieval, which is about whether suppose that you have some sample or some specimen that you like to measure. But due to the super high frequency of the optical sensors or detectors, you won't be able to measure the phases of the light in a very precise way. So usually what you end up getting is some kind of intensity measurements of the light. Mathematically, this can be viewed as some kind of quadratic measurements about the true object that you like to estimate. So the phase retrieval problem basically is about how to recover the ground truth signal if you only have this kind of quadratic measurements. So this Yue has already talked about, so I'm not going to go into details about this. More recently, there are several people who claim that, okay, this can be treated as some basic module for understanding maybe neural nets. I'm not fully convinced by this, but this is something that has been there. So. Think about a one-layer neural net where you have some activation function sigma, and there are several groups of people who claim that if you consider quadratic activation function, and eventually this boils down to some kind of quadratic equations about the weights. The weights is something that you like to learn. The thing is that quadratic activation is never used in practice, so this is part of the reason I'm not fully convinced, but just there are some investigation about these kind of things. Okay. Okay. So in order to solve this problem, very natural way is to look at this non-convex optimization problem. So basically, I try to minimize the quadratic loss, find the solution that best fits the data. Okay, usually they choose a quadratic loss if you don't have more information about the noise. Okay, so the thing about this, the tricky thing about this this objective function is that it's a degree 4 polynomial in the decision variable, so it's highly non-convex. So computationally, it could be very challenging at first sight, or in general, this could be a very challenging task. But the thing is that if you have more structure about AK, for example, if your design vector is ID Gaussian, things are much nicer. Okay, so about 4 years ago by Emmanuel Candice, Xiaodong Li, Maddy, Sotno, Kotobi, and they come up with a famous algorithm called Wertinger flow, which can solve this problem in a very nice way. The algorithm, it's a very simple one. So I have a two-stage algorithm. First of all, I find a warm start for this algorithm. So I find a good initialization, and there is a way to do it, which Yue has already discussed this morning. After that, you run gradient descent. Okay, if you this algorithm is called vertical flow because originally they want to deal with complex value measurements. But if you are dealing with the real value case, basically this is just gradient descent. Okay, so we have initialization, we have gradient descent, and this is something that already enjoys a lot of theory and enjoy a lot of nice empirical performance about this for solving phase retrieval. Okay, so the rationale is also very, very simple. I think this rationale dates back maybe at least to Andreas matrix and Sewang's matrix completion paper. So the first thing you do is that even though this is a non-convex function, locally this might not be that much different from a convex function. So if you are able to start within a nice region, which is usually sufficiently close to the ground truth, and after that you can treat it almost like a convex or restrictive version of convex function, and after that you do iterative refinement. If you are careful enough to make sure you always stay within the space of attraction, and then you are done. If you converge, you converge to the right thing. Okay. So this is a basic rationale for this kind of two-stage approaches, very natural, and it has inspired a lot of work, starting from Andreas Feng and Emmanuel, you know, a lot of things. But this talk, I would like to ask a different question about. It's basically about whether initialization is really crucial for this kind of, for the success of this paradigm. Part of the reason people like to do this is because both the initialization phase and the gradient descent phase can be run in a very efficient way, and they have very low computational complexity. So two-stage algorithm gives you usually the best computational complexity you can ever hope for. But now my question is that if you don't have such a nice initialization, but rather you start randomly, whether you still get something nice, or do you really need initialization? Okay. Okay. Let me take a look at this level set. So let me put the problem in two dimensions and look at the level set of this problem. So if you are able to start from a nice initialization, it means that you are starting from somewhere close to the ground truth. In this case, if you look at the level set, it's very, very convex, which means that you have a nice problem to start with if you are able to always stay within this region. Now the question is that can you start from anywhere and still get the same results? Clearly no, because there are some bad critical points there, which are the saddle points. So if you start from here, if you run vanilla gradient descent, you get stuck there. Well, you can do something more fancy to deal with this, but if you just think about vanilla gradient descent, you get stuck there. But if you found this picture, there are only...
It's hard to find this nice place. It's not only the fact that there exist bad points, but spurious memory elsewhere. It's just that the entropy is big. It's hard to, the drift is small. It's hard to find a small region when you start from a typical random point.
Depends on which problem you're talking about. For this particular problem, it turns out that it's not that hard. Yeah, in general, it's true. But for this particular problem, it's probably different. Okay. But if you look at this picture, there are only two saddle points here. So if you start randomly, you will not hit any of them. Probably you will be sufficiently away from any of them. So now the question is, if you start the algorithm randomly, which is basically, for phase retrieval, basically is what practitioners are doing in practice, do you still have any hope to get to the right solution and within a reasonable time? Okay, so this is the question I like to address in this talk. Now there are some prior work that can help us get some first understanding about this question. So again, about 2 years ago, and then by John Wright's group, and they look at the problem from a geometric perspective, and they say if you have enough samples, the landscape is very nice, similar to what Natty has shown for the matrix sensing problem. So you don't have bad local minimum, you only have saddle points. enough sample, it means information limit times some logarithmic factor up to some like log to log cube or something like that. I think that can be improved, but yeah, okay. Okay, so this is landscape results. And after that, as what Mike Jordan talked about yesterday, is by Jason Lee, Mike Jordan, Ben Rett, and I think two other people, they show that if you run gradient descent with random initialization, you are guaranteed to find a global solution, almost surely, if the problem is nice enough. Okay, but the thing is that this convergence result does not provide any kind of rates kind of things. So if you only have this kind of result, practically, it might actually mean that it's taking you forever to run it. In fact, by the same group of people, I think, they come up with one counterexample saying that this problem has nice landscape, but it takes them exponential time to converge, exponential in the dimension. So in the imaging case, usually the dimension is super high. So if you need exponential time to converge, it's not a good thing for you. It's a good message for you.
But it's a special, worst case?
Yeah, that's a worst case thing. So that's basically what I tried to say.
Can you go slightly away from it? Does it get much better?
The thing is, what do you mean by slightly away from that? So yeah, but for this specific problem, I like.
And if you know more about, let's say, strict saddle properties and things like that?
Yeah, they have strict saddle points. So the example they come up with have strict saddle.
Uh-huh.
And
quantitatively strict, or just strict?
Quantitatively strict, yeah, I think so. Yeah. But that's a very weird example, but which you never have.
I don't mean you found that connection away from zero.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No,
a generic example. Yeah, generic example. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now I try to understand more about this. Okay, so in order to do this, let's start from some numerical example to see what's really happening in practice. So I start with the random initialization, Gaussian kind of random initialization, and then I'm plotting the L2 error as a function of the iteration count. And this is a numerical curve you get. So the y-axis is plotted logarithmically, okay? So you see that actually in the first 40 iterations, probably things are not changing that fast. But after that, I have a straight line here. Straight line in this plot means the algorithm is converging geometrically fast, okay? So it seems that numerically, even though I change the problem size from 100 to 1,000, it takes you 200 iterations to get 5-digit accuracy. So practically, it seems to be very, very fast. And the convergence rate doesn't seem to depend on the dimension that much. Okay. So it's almost like a dimension-free kind of numerical observation.
So this is gradient descent?
Gradient descent from random
problem?
For phase retrieval problem, for phase retrieval. Okay, so I have two stages, which the first stage takes me about several tens of iteration. After that, I see this is what optimization people call linear convergence. Basically, you see a straight line on this kind of things. Okay, so now to get to understand this a little better, because now stage one is still a little mysterious to me. Okay, basically, this talk is basically about stage one. From this curve, it's a little harder to see what's really happening. But if I add another plot, which is the correlation between my current iterate and the ground truth, and then now my ground truth is set to have norm. If I plot this, and you see that I start randomly, and it means that correlation is very low, but very fastly it goes up. Exponentially fast, and then the saturation is around 1. 1 is the right number because it means that you're almost like perfectly correlated with the ground truth. Okay, so with these plots together, you sort of see what's happening. In both of the stages, there are something happening geometrically fast. And so if you combine these two stages together, you might have some belief that maybe it only takes you a few iterations to get to any accuracy that you like. Okay, so these are just some numerics, but all of these can be formally quantified. Okay, so this is the theory for the noiseless case. Suppose I have a random measurement, ID Gaussian measurements. Okay, I need to introduce a little bit things about the L2 distance. In this case, there is some global ambiguity that you have to deal with. But treat this distance thing as a L2 error. Now I'm going to have, I run a gradient descent with random initialization, and this is the result that we are going to get. It looks a little complicated, but I'm going to break it into four different messages so that you will see what this really is saying. Okay, so the first message is that it takes me roughly like log n iterations to get to an L2 error that is roughly like 0.1. Okay, this is a very concrete constant number, let's say 0.1. So the first stage, it takes me about log n iterations. After that, I have so-called linear convergence or geometric convergence, meaning that the L2 error is decreasing geometrically fast.
So is there an interpretation for stage one in terms of like, you know, you're getting the signs right?
Yeah, you're always getting the sign right, yeah.
No, is it like the time that it takes you to get the signs right from the random initialization?
What do you mean by the signs, right?
For like the unknown...
I mean, signs with respect to the output, or, I mean,
no,
what do you mean?
The sign of every
entry? Or, that I don't know. Yeah, that I don't know. Yeah. But that I don't know. Yeah, I think it's you're getting. Yeah, I think it's also increasing geometrically fast, but I'm not sure. I think so. Okay.
Converging to the leading eigenvector of the Hessian.
Yeah, but I don't know whether it's monotone or not. I think so, but...
you're not getting the signs right, probably.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'll get to, you know, most of the signs right, but not all of them. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. So I have these two stages. The first stage take log n iteration. The second stage take me log 1 over epsilon to get to epsilon accuracy. So put these two stages put together, it takes me roughly log n plus log 1 over epsilon iterations to get epsilon accuracy. Okay. And all of this happens when your sample size, you know, it's a logarithmic factor away from the information theoretic limit. So if you are fine with the log factor, some log factor, and then this is optimal. Information.
Should that be log of n?
They are roughly the same thing. Usually log to the n is fine because unless m is like exponentially large, and they are the same thing. I'm hiding a constant here. Okay. So before I get how many minutes do I have? Like, okay. So. One thing that I'd like to say before I get to any of the analysis is that, a lot of people try to think about how to escape the saddle points in a generic way. But now I'm analyzing vanilla gradient descent, so how come that I never need to worry about saddle escaping? Because if you look at the typical trajectory here, so this is like a saddle point, blue point is a saddle point. I'm plotting a sort of like a trajectory here. And your gradient descent trajectory actually never get close to the saddle point. Well, you get close, but not really close. So as long as they are, you know, like reasonably close, and there will be a positive force dragging it away from the saddle point. So eventually, it's never close to the saddle point, so you never really need to escape it. And this is probably something that I like to say. It's in a lot of problems, at least empirically, in matrix completion, matrix sensing, you know, dictionary learning, your gradient descent algorithm never get close to saddle points, so there's never a need for you to escape the saddle point. Alpha t, it's a correlation between the iterator and the ground truth, and beta t is the rest, so the residual size in some sense.
And how many saddle points do you have in the
You have infinite saddle points there, actually, for this problem. But they have measure zero, but you have infinite number of them. Yeah, isn't so. Yeah, if you map everything down to alpha t and beta t, if you have infinite samples, they are only like one point here. It's only one saddle point here. But one means infinite, actually. So. Okay, so so this is what I like to say to. So if you use separated landscape and convergence analysis, and people can come up with a lot of algorithms, like trust region method, QB regularization, perturb gradient descent. If you apply them to this particular problem, all of them have very high iteration complexity for you. But for this particular problem, if you just use gradient descent with random initialization, and if you analyze it carefully, you get much better iteration complexity compared to all of them. Okay, so this is what I try to say. Generic optimization theory is nice, but usually it's very, very conservative. So maybe you need to think twice about whether you really believe that the results there are capture what's happening in practice. Do I have time to for analysis? Okay, so. Okay, so let me try for 2 minutes. Okay, so the starting point is that usually when we try to analyze these kind of things, we start from the infinite sample case. So you first want to make sure the things are right if you have infinite samples. Otherwise, there's no hope for you to say something reasonable. The thing is that if you have infinite samples here, so F, capital F now means the infinite sample loss function. In this case, you have a very simple expression. You don't need to remember what this expression is, but what I try to say is that if you have infinite samples, it's very, very easy to figure out for this problem and also something similar like matrix factorization kind of problem. You can factorize them into two parameters. First, it's about the correlation between the ground truth and the signal, and also beta t is residual. Basically, everything orthogonal to the ground truth direction. And if you have infinite samples, it's very easy to figure out that there is sort of like a two-parameter state evolution kind of dynamics. And since you only have two parameters, it takes you, you know, a few minutes to figure out by hand that actually this is what's happening in practice. Now, the difficulty is it's definitely not the population level analysis, it's a finite sample analysis. So suppose that now I need to deal with a finite number of samples. Now the thing is that you have some residual there, so you have to take care of that. Now, for example, if you want to deal with residual, you have to deal with some kind of complicated polynomials there. One of the terms that looks like this, AI1 is basically just the first coordinate of the design vector. AI perp means everything else. Okay, so you somehow need to deal with something like this, and you want to deal with it in a very, very fine manner. So it's not that you can take a concentration of measure argument to deal with this. You need to make sure that this is controlled at a level roughly the same as, you know, what you get by central limit theorem if everything is independent. So if you can use fresh samples every iteration and everything, it's easy. But the thing is that you don't have fresh samples every iteration. So how are you going to decouple the dependency? Okay, so I guess I'm running out of time. So I just want to hint that there's something called Lebanow analysis or some variant of that that can help us do something like this. And this definitely is not our idea, and it dates back to maybe Charles Stein or Al Karoui, or Andrea has some paper related to this and a lot of things. And this somehow allows us to decouple some dependency in some appropriate way that allows us to control the quantity in the desired level. Okay, so I'm not going to get into this. Okay, so to conclude, like to say is that for specific statistical problems, if you look at things more carefully, maybe even the simplest algorithms already works the best. Sometimes you don't need to use smart initialization, you don't need to split the samples, you don't need to use sophisticated saddle escaping algorithms. Okay, and thank you very much.
approach is not good enough, so we'll just special case it. Can we extend the generic approach? And can you extract from this some properties? We know, for example, you know, just no local minima is not enough. We need strict setup. Then we can get something in strict setup.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we get another property?
I tried,
couple it, say this problem has this property, maybe many other problems also, and that's enough for getting the same course.
Yeah, so far I couldn't find any of the useful properties there. So far everything depends too much on the statistical analysis, every iteration.
It seems like one of the key properties is the repulsion from the saddle points, right?
Yes.
In terms of the improvement you get from separating
the pieces. That is strict saddle in some sense, yeah. That is not sufficient because you want to make sure that you never get really close to the saddle in some sense.
We know it's not sufficient. There's an example that's strict saddle, but grading, unperturbed grading descent takes forever.
Yeah, and take exponential time, so take exponential.
But is it cooked up so that you have heteroclinic orbits in it, in the flows? So you go from change index the saddle as you go from, sorry. Is it cooked up so you have heteroclinic orbits? And so as you go along, you go from a one saddle to a saddle of a different index and keep going right directly to the other saddles?
Yes, it is cooked up. but the point is that just having strict saddle, then we know, is not sufficient. Right?
Yeah,
so the question is, can we have like a stronger property? That basically says it's not cooked up anymore.
Well, okay, but supposing I take it and I just change and make a small deformation of the problem, is it still very hard? Considering if there's a heteroclinic structure in it, that's very unstable. It's not structurally stable.
Okay, so I don't have a good answer for that because, first of all, the way that they cook up this example is extremely artificial. So I'm not sure that, I think there probably are some more nicer examples also share this property, but which I don't really know. So they didn't come up with a class of problems that make it hard, actually. They cook up with just one example, but it doesn't say that other nice problem can be dealt with. I tried to think about this, but I couldn't come up with any useful property that makes sure that gradient descent. But the thing is that in almost all the saddle escaping kind of work, when they try to motivate why they do this, all of the examples that they look at, if you run gradient descent, it always works. So I think this is a question that maybe you can treat it as an open problem about what really are the nice property that can guarantee fast convergence gradient descent. I don't know.
So from your numerical slide, it looked like 10 times n should be enough. So is there any
what hope, is enough? Sorry,
like the number of samples being 10 times n is enough?
So
what is blocking the path to cutting these poly log n factors and getting the constants down?
You mean theoretically or practically?
Well, practically.
Practically, because this 10 is not really needed. So you 4 or 5, it's already you already
right,
see roughly
but
the
theoretically.
Same thing. Yeah, but theoretically, so maybe it's because of the approach that we are using. I don't think we get the right scaling, because I think probably you can get it down to a single log rather than log to the 7 to. Log to the 5 or something like that, but
stage factors methods when you have
two stage. If you do the second stage is vanilla gradient descent, you also need n log n. So,
okay.
So because there is a way to get rid of the log n factor, but you need to use more complicated things, more complicated algorithm like what you has discussed this morning. If you want to do, for example, like initialization stage, you need to prepare, like what Andrea has done, you need to pre-process the data in some sense to get rid of some heavy tail kind of things. Even for the second stage, because of the data is, every iteration is too heavy tail in some sense. So if you want to get the best sample complexity, you need to do something more complicated than gradient descent. But with log n, I think everything should be fine, but
other questions? Well, if not, we can.